The hell's the matter with you?
This is a different thing. It's spontaneous, and it's called wit.
Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks with Jackie Schechner and Tony Sorrentino and T-Bone all together as one big family for the last day of the week.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm a little sad.
Yes.
It's like the last day of camp.
It kind of is.
I may cry.
Right. But we have the bus ride home to fool around, so that's good.
Can we make out the back of the bus?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
That's what the ride back was for. Right. This is at the end, in many ways, of a tumultuous week and just the beginning of the response to the stuff that happened. I mean, we are dealing with – I have my own theories about the Republican Congress, and I've been very open about them, that I think it's – that people who say that the modern Congress is dysfunctional are missing the entire point, that there is simply an alternative function to it. That we would view my idea
they're
of function.
They're functionally obstructionist.
Exactly. That is their goal and job as far as they see it. They are there to run interference against federal encroachment on the abortion laws they want to pass, the equal pay laws they want to, you know, stop. They, you know, anything that, you know, voting rights.
Right.
The job of a congressional Republican these days is Red Rover, is just clench hands with your fellow obstructionists and hold on for dear life. Just ride out this period while we have the black president, while we have gay rights, you know, moving forward. If we can just hold on long enough, we'll get back to this sort of 50s imaginary reset point when things were simpler and better, and if not, then society will collapse. This is the reasoning and belief. And so
they're taking a waited out approach.
Yeah, they're taking a hold the line approach.
Okay.
So some of them, you know, in the Senate, you can cross your arms. You've got a 6-year term. If you only really have to go through one major election cycle during a presidency.
Right.
I mean, if you get in there right as he's in there, whoever that is, or she, in the next round, fingers crossed, you've only got to defend your position once in that entire presidential term, unlike the president who has to do it twice, you know, start and finish.
Right.
And you may not even have to do it that. If it ends up in the middle, it's just the senators have it easy. Congress people have to do it every 2 years. And so what they're doing is this is triage, I think, as far as what they want to accomplish. And especially in the area of gay rights and women's rights, they are, I think, in terms of the modern Tea Party Republican, one and the same. I think that
you think gay rights and women's rights are the same to them.
Yeah, I think this is an attack on the feminine, and that there's an idea that femininity is a sign of weakness, however it is carried out. And the perception is that women should serve because of biblical reasons and all kinds of other things, and their natural genetic tendency to be smaller on a statistical level than men. I'm talking, again, let's be really clear while we're talking about all this stuff, two important things we need to know. One is, explanation is not advocacy. When I explain something to you about a thought form, I'm not necessarily buying into it myself. I'm just trying to give you a picture of how the other brain works from my perspective. It doesn't mean I think it's right by any stretch. I'm just telling you this is where their thought comes from. And when we talk about the national security apparatus, or we talk about our relationship with Israel, or we talk about all these touchy areas with war and stuff, it's very important that we have a structural understanding of
how things work.
Yes, the opposition's thought form.
Yeah.
The other thing is I'm sorry to say for my Southern friends, ignorance is not innocence. These are the two problems we have. Liberals will often think that explanation means advocacy. Conservatives will think that ignorance equals innocence. If I don't know anything about it, how could I possibly be guilty of it? That's a big one. Paula Deen, you're hearing that a lot from her. Now, I don't know if that's offensive to somebody. Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
But the perception of ignorance automatically creates innocence. And the problem with it, that's where abstinence-only education comes from. That's if we keep them dumb about this, they're not going to be guilty of it. They can't even participate it if they don't know. So ignorance equals innocence. This is a thought form that's pervasive in the South.
Right.
And is pushed in the education systems. That's why you need federal guidance over a lot of schools, because these are the people running the schools down there believe on some level that ignorance equals innocence. Now, back to the explanation of what I think the the problem the right has with both women and gays. One is the perception that women, due to biblical history and their physical perception of what they believe a woman's brain is capable of or her body is capable of, as far as the limitations on it, somehow make it that they are automatically male and superior simply by size or institutional tradition. That we've been patriarchal for long enough, that proves its worth in and of itself. It's been around so long, that must be the way. This is also used with traditional marriage.
Sure.
It's always been this way. So it, never mind the fact that the entire American governmental system is based on a total reboot of political systems. That up till the U.S. existed, every other governmental system, for the most part, was monarchical or theological. So that America is a total break with tradition,
okay.
A total affront to tradition, and arguably, if you're a fan of the writings of Jesus and the teachings of Jesus, he was actually a break with tradition. He actually went against the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth concept, which had been around for millennia, in terms of how you deal with things, and said things like turn the other cheek and love thy neighbor, which was a total reboot, much like the United States was a total reboot, much like gay rights in terms of marriage are perceived as a total reboot in terms of traditional marriage.
Right.
There's this idea, though, that men have been in charge so long that that's clearly the way it should be, and you're messing with the system. You're going to collapse the system if women get too much control over this. This is, and I'm getting to a clip that I'm going to play before we go to break, of the reaction to the gay rights ruling this week, the DOMA strike down, from the religious and political extremes of the far right.
Which are intertwined.
Yes, no question.
Because they don't tend to think that the far right politically is not fundamentally based on some
absolutely
religious excuse they use to hide their, or not hide, their bigotry.
It's the safest way to do it, because you've got this
discrimination.
Let's say you and I both read from the same book, have the same beliefs based on that book. If I can find a way to justify my own personal bigotry or hatred through using the book that you already believe in, I've already got a leg up in my argument with you. And if you have a vast majority of
because we're coming from the same place.
Exactly. Even if I'm interpreting it differently or I'm using it selectively to control.
But I'll believe in the book because it's what I read.
Exactly. You'll never completely undermine my position because you at least have the intrinsic belief in the book. And that's how biblical, teachings are used often for the highest level of bigotry, to justify slavery, to do all these kind of things, because it's in there, because it's a tribal book that's been around for a long time. There's a lot of contradiction.
But wide open to interpretation.
Totally. And so I can grab that, and you can go, I don't think that way at all. I actually read it this way. You can go, well, here's this verse. You got to kind of buy that. And you go, well, things changed, but did they really? There's room.
Okay.
So my belief is that there's an intrinsic anti-female view in the patriarchal systems that have been around, and from theological governmental systems to now. And I believe that the attack on gay people, because it specifically goes more towards gay men, there's definitely a stark
difference
in how gay men are treated versus lesbians are treated in the culture. Not that they're dismissed anymore or denied any more rights, but that there's this social difference.
It's less icky.
Right, exactly.
For men.
Because of the illusion that most men believe they can turn whomever.
Haven't met the right man yet.
Exactly. Or if a woman or, if somebody I'm interested in is not interested in me, I can get them gay or straight. Men have that kind of leaning. That's, it's part of our biochemical makeup. That being said, I think there is a perception in the hard theological right, in the hard political right, that femininity is a sign of weakness and pacificity. And if a man wants to be with another man, he's kind of wanting to be feminine. He's kind of wanting to be like a woman. Being with a man is a woman's place, so if a guy wants to be with a man, he wants to be like a woman. Therefore, cogito ergo sum, he wants to be weak, that this is the weakening of the male thing. You see this conversation on Fox all the time. This is the feminization of men. That's it's a real problem. I think they're linked. And I've often said that you'll be hard-pressed to find a genuine homophobe that doesn't have an abused girlfriend or wife in their past. Because this idea of femininity equals weakness in male or female. Their perception is that's what it is. They don't understand that.
I'm sorry, Tony's ordering food in the background.
No, he's dealing with the cameras. By the way, if you're listening and you're used to watching on Current,
yes.
They're having a camera issue. So you might be seeing Vanguard right now and going, what the heck? But they're fixing that right now.
Yeah, Hal and I went to the jungle to search for marijuana or whatever the Vanguard.
Yeah, that Vanguard thing. Yeah, they're following us through Guatemala. And yes, Tony? Let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to play a compilation. Boink. A compilation of sort of the right-wing responses to DOMA.
Okay.
And I think it will bear out kind of what I'm saying. And I want to hear from people if they think that that's part of their thought form. If they have a problem with women in the workplace and gay marriage, or if one's okay and the other isn't. You know, I want to.
One step further, too, okay. Because I think there's a reason why men behave this way with regard to women they find threatening.
I'd like to hear it after the break, unlike some of the men you're talking about. we'll be back right after this. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks with Jackie Schechner filling in today, and the cameras will be up when they're up.
I'm kind of known for having a twisted sense of humor.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Hal Sparks, and I know a thing or two about you. So this is here.
Okay, creepy.
Yes, and I just at a certain point.
I watch you.
I want to play this clip. This is a compilation of right wing reaction, including a couple of shots of Pat Robertson, which are always sort of the hilarious frosting on the cake that is depression on the right side when anything life-affirming, positive, supportive of a minority or somebody who's been disenfranchised, be it the passing of the Americans with Disabilities Act to the Lilly Ledbetter Act. Every time they come out, this is the tonality. You can kind of substitute what words they're using, but it's always, this is going to be the end of the world. This is how you know society is dying, is because women can vote, is because black people can marry white people, is because we're not interning Japanese people anymore, is because the Russians are among us. It's we're full of communists. The fluoridation is happening, whatever. Like, but each time something happens where you're like, we need to stop bothering those people and let them just live. This is always the response.
I don't really believe homosexuals want to get married. What they want to do is destroy marriage and some of the other things that we have in our society.
I don't like a woman married to a woman. It makes me want to puke. How's that? I want to vomit when I hear it.
The idea that men can marry men and women marry women in the USA is a sign of a civilization in its final throes.
It will bring the destruction of this nation.
Sodom was destroyed by God Almighty, and the thing that they practiced was homosexual activity, and even they tried to rape angels.
The children's minds are being raped by the homosexual mafia. That's my position.
If you change the variables and say that it doesn't have to be a man and a woman, it could be a woman and a woman or a man and a man, well, now you get into all different things because other people are going to say, well, wait a minute, why can't one man marry three women?
How can we rule that polygamy is illegal? When you say the homosexual marriage is legal, what is it about polygamy that's different?
A man and a woman, or a man and a man, or a woman, why not a man and a woman, a woman, a woman?
And what about bestiality? And ultimately, what about child molestation and pedophilia?
How about group marriage? Or marriage between daddies and little girls? How about marriage between a man and his donkey?
You could have married a duck.
I can marry my dog. Using that argument, I can marry five women.
You want to marry a turtle, you can.
When two men get together and make a baby, I'll change my point of view. But until then, no way.
I'm hung up on turtle marriage and angel rape.
And daddy marrying little girls and man marrying his donkey. This was the James Dobson ones, which are fantastic.
They need hobbies.
Again,
like, this is an amazing overactive imagination.
Oh, well, I'll go you one better on this. This is
Better than angel rape.
Well, first of all,
and
that's,
turtle marriage.
That's true. In the story of Sodom and Gomorrah,
okay.
A mob of men showed up and said, while these two angels were visiting, I guess it was Lot and his family, said, "Hey, kick those men that you have visiting in there, whether out here into the street, so we may know them." They wanted to take advantage of the two angels. And to his credit, Lot said, "No, I'm sorry. I can't let that happen. These are visitors in my house. They also happen to be supernatural beings whom, I don't know, might get angry if I let you just have your way with them physically. So tell you what, instead of having them turn around and use their angel-like powers to X-Men you guys all in half, how about you just rape my daughters instead?" So he offered them his daughters instead so that they would leave the angels alone. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good trade-off.
Oh, it's good. And I've always said in the angel raping world, first of all, they're 9 foot tall, light emanating beings with wings. I don't know how you get sexually turned on by that. I can't imagine. I probably see you outside of a lighthouse acting in an untoward way. If that was what turns you on, every time I look at the sun, it's amazing. It doesn't make any sense to me. That being said, also that. They can fly, so I'm just saying
they could get away.
I don't want to blame the victim, but yeah, in this case, fold your wings. You know what I mean? Maybe yeah. You know. Notice that there was no flare up on the right saying the angels had it coming. I mean, with the with the feathers and the big blonde hair and the white white
the
light
white
coming
robe.
Out of there. Yeah. Mm. Oh, the flowing gown that the angels had it coming. You know what I mean?
They were dressed provocatively.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or undressed. I don't know what angels wear in the Bible.
Hard to say.
Okay.
Hard to say. And by the way, to all those out in the Twitterverse who are like, "I don't know why I'm watching a special on marijuana." there's camera issues here on the current feed. So we will we'll let you know when that's back up and running. But you can listen via a lot of different routes. The TuneIn app, if you have a smartphone.
Why don't we do like an old-timey thing where people gather around the computer as if they were sitting in
like
front of
a fire.
Radio. Right, like the fireside chat. I would say gather around your radio.
Sure.
I would imagine nobody has those anymore.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You can gather around
you just
do
this. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and all our ships at sea. This is your broadcast from the front lines. I wish you could see what I'm doing. I'm just using my coffee bean bag that has my brand muffin in it. Attention, everyone. Gay marriage has been made de facto legal in 12 states across the United States, and the flare-up from the right wing is completely bonkers city. I'm actually, until they get that up and running, I will turn on my Ustream feed on my iPad mini. So we can at least give you guys a look around and join in the chat that way.
That's cool.
Yeah, at least until they give us kind of the up and running.
Oh, this is so cute.
What?
My mother sent a note
that
says, "Where is the show today?
Where
is everything
are you?
Okay?"
Aww.
Do we love my mother?
We do. What? We actually do. And I was also excited. I hope the cameras end up working because I was going to show off some of my 3D printed stuff this morning. I was going to make the case for 3D printing at one point.
Tony just threw up his hands like, "I told you to take a break and you're ignoring me."
No, I'm listening. Oh. I heard him. He's so good.
No, I just think 3D printing is kind of awesome.
What,
yeah.
3D printing?
Yeah, he was giving the thumbs
amazingly
up.
Amazingly.
Yeah,
yeah.
The unfortunate part is that immediately as it went, as it started to gain ground, the 3D printed gun business became part of the only part of the conversation, which is lame and childish and limited in many ways, like beyond measure. And that's, by the way, they're all up. Those files are up. But there's so many cool things you can make.
And most people said the 3D gun is like, don't do it. It probably won't work.
It'll
blow
your thumbs off is what it'll do.
Shatter,
yeah, it's a great way to, to lose, to blow your hands off. Yeah, this
what,
is great.
What, just had a 3D print a gun?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the bullets don't come included, right?
No. They have to be regular bullets because plastic casing on
you'll
a bullet.
You'll shoot your eye out.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. It'll blow your thumbs off. Welcome back to the show. Oh, that's the new Alice in Chains.
Yeah.
The fact that they named it The Devil Put Dinosaurs Here, which is a reference in many ways, you know, it's got a big triceratops skull on the front of it.
That's a reference
to a belief in far evangelical fringes, and this is by no means mainstream Christianity, that the devil hid dinosaur bones here, and or God did, it depends on who you talk to test faith. That you'd find them, and then if you believe in evolution, you'll go to hell. And made famous, and I'm sure this is where they got their direct reference from, by Bill Hicks, who was like, okay, I'm going to strap myself in, I'm going to tie myself into this chair, explain to me dinosaurs. And then he goes, this guy goes, well, God put those here, he hid the bones here to test our faith. He's like, well, good thing I'm tied down, because you're testing my faith right now, man. Let's take a call. Let's go to Michael in Los Angeles. Hi, Michael.
Hey, good morning, Hal and Jackie. You guys are doing a great job.
Oh, thank you.
For Stephanie.
Thank you.
And I love, Hal, how you speak truth to power, but you do it with wit and a sense of humor. And that's why I was calling, because I was on Facebook last night, and in this one comment thread that was run by a conservative friend of mine, mm-hmm. they're talking about the same stuff, polygamy, bigamy, we're going to sure. have bestiality, and I don't know where, I mean, who's advocating that? And this is kind of the comment that I made. I said, I don't know any group or any individual or any political party that's advocating that. Where are you getting this from?
Well,
you know?
Right. I think in most of those situations that you just kind of have to let them flail about, and they will end up. The problem is that their fears are not going to be borne out in reality. There is no point where consensual pairings of adults lead automatically to man marries donkey, and we're all supposed to literally be okay with it. It doesn't. It's not going to happen. Nor is the this mythology that somehow churches are going to be forced. To marry gay couples against their will or whatever. That's never going to happen.
That one too.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. Churches have the ability to, you know, you can't force, for example, like either Orthodox Jewish or hyper-Orthodox Christian or Orthodox Muslim communities to have women not wear hijabs or not cover their hair or whatever. That's they're allowed that part because that's the confines of their church building. They're allowed to do whatever they want within the confines of that as long as they're not physically damaging another human being. And so no church is going to be forced to do anything that's outside their religion. There's no... You can't, a moil will not be able to kick the doors in on a Christian church and go, I'm going to circumcise everybody here.
Give me a zinger, Hal. I need some good zingers for Facebook
See, I don't think you get, first of all, Facebook is a dead zone. It's the, you know, it's now the outer Craigslist of the internet, unfortunately. Now that everybody's grandmother is on there, the benefit of that apartment building is gone. It is now time to buy your own home.
Are you telling me Friendster's over too?
No. That's going to come back around. Here's the thing. The best response, and we were talking about, Jackie and I were talking about, the best response to a lot of the haters and a lot of that stuff is, my favorite is yawn. You will find often in my Twitter feed when people have really thrown some vitriolic nonsense my way or whatever, I'll just type in response to them, yawn.
I like meh.
Yeah, and she likes meh a lot, M-E-H.
That's a good one.
The reality is you're not going to talk – you know what's going to talk them out of their crazy belief? You know what's really going to convince them that they're wrong? Time.
No.
But you can't speed that process up. You can't convince them otherwise because they are flipping out. Because every piece of information they're hearing from Fox News to 700 Club to their own pastor to their own homophobic friends or what have you – they're hearing it from three different sources that this is the end of the world. And hearing the opposite from you isn't going to cancel out those other three that they trust implicitly more. The only thing that's ever going to stop them from having this thought is either passing away or the empirical test of time. And so at a certain point, you just have to go...
Thanks for sharing a personal conversation with somebody that they care about.
Right, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Facebook. You know what I mean? I agree with that. Yeah. At a certain point,
like a Rob Portman situation where.
See, and by the way, and thank you for the call, Michael. I hope that's helpful.
It did, and I was actually able to get through to one person by stating how marriage rights had been taken away in history in the United States. you know, from interracial couples. They've been listening to Rush Limbaugh yesterday, who said that no one had ever had their right to marry taken away in the United States, which is just flat out wrong.
Sure, and many people have been denied it on face. There also the ability, you know, children to marry, you know, had been sort of taken away. That was at one point okay. We decided it's not okay. There was an inversion of this kind of thing where we go, you can't just promise your 12-year-old to some old dude for a piece of land and just go, that's fine. We don't allow that in this country. So this idea that traditional marriage has always been the same and it's been floating along without any interruption for a long time, without any society ever saying, this part bugs me, or I need to fix this, or this is unfair, is absurd. And that's true. I mean, this entire, and thanks so much for the call, Michael, this entire concept that there are immutable, unchangeable traditions that are valuable, you know, on face, and that somehow changing them would be the destruction of our society, as opposed to the evolution of our society. Which is really what's going on. I mean, the idea that, like, you had Rush joke and then catch himself, like, 3 months ago, that all these problems started when women got the vote. And then then when he came back from break, he was kidding. But when he...
hysterical.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. And when he said it, he was not kidding. He meant it. And all the people he talks to on a regular basis meant it. And they mean it all the time. And
I just think the men who speak out so vehemently against women, against homosexuals, against anybody who doesn't look or sound like them in any capacity are the most insecure and the most threatened in their own...
Sure. Well, statistically speaking... Sorry, all my phones are going completely haywire. As it does, because people are chiming in on all fronts.
Ah.
This is what happens when the current thing is down and everybody's like trying to get their chat in elsewhere. They want to send in like on Twitter, on...
But not on Facebook because it's dead.
No, I mean, I still have one, but it's kind of... I really do relegate it to like the MySpace trash heap of history. I've said people before, I really like Feed. I think that's a good way to go. I still use Instagram. I like Twitter in that regard. I think it's a conversation. I don't think it's antisocial to use social media.
Oh, no,
I don't have this illusion that somehow you're disconnected from the people in your life. I actually think
it connects you more.
Yeah.
But I've made that argument for a very long time.
I call it super social. I think that the us plus internet, if used correctly, is super social. I'm including people who aren't even in the room, which is arguably what the act of legislation is. I'm including people who aren't in the room. There may
if
not
you're
be...
representing the people who elected you into office.
Sure. Or representing people, even if they didn't, the specific people who didn't vote for you, but you're saying, these people didn't vote for me. They don't have a place at the table. It's not like I'm only doing this for my donors. At a certain point, I speak for all the people in my county.
But that doesn't happen as often as it should.
No, but I'm saying that's...
That's an ideal...
That's what it should be. And
system.
And arguably, when politicians do that, a lot of times they catch hell from both sides and kind of end up being watered out or considered, you know, standardized politicians. That's the unfortunate part. And at a certain point in history, it wasn't like that, though, I don't think. I think that reaching bipartisanship and reaching across the aisle was a matter of numerics. Like, okay, we've got, you know... $3 billion for this program or whatever, you know, this military program. Well, I think, quite frankly, small arms is more important for our current soldiers' needs than one big fighter jet. And I think we should take that fighter jet funding and split that up between, you know, revamping our current fighter jets, you know, repairing them, making them last 3 more years in case we're in a conflict, working towards a better fighter jet long term, and we'll take the other half of that and put it towards conventional arms. Well, I disagree. I think we need to keep more soldiers out of the field.
The foundation of that is an ability to talk to each
other,
and that doesn't exist anymore.
Right, no. And, well, what I'm saying is the baseline of the negotiation was largely numeric and budgetary based on your principles and your ideas of how it should, you know, how this situation should work. The problem is now you have an entire group of people who have no interest in it working.
Right.
And the Republican...
Well, this comes back around to what we were talking about yesterday, right. Whether you fundamentally believe the government is good or government is bad.
Right.
And if you have a fundamental belief that government's bad, government can never do anything good, then you're coming at everything from that perspective.
Sure.
If you believe that government can do good, is built for good, maybe has gone off course, but it's fundamentally a good entity, then you come at all of this from a different perspective. And the problem is there's too many people now who don't believe in government at all.
Right. Which is baloney, because they absolutely do. This is, again, to use my traffic analogy all the time, these are the same people who think that if you ask them openly, are the majority of people stupid? They'll go, yes. The majority of people are dumb. They'll, you know, they're sheeple, whatever. There's people on the left who are, you know, big fans of Greenwald and Snowden, far pushed to the left as far as you can kind of go, who believe in general that the American people are sheeple and they will just, advertising and governmental programs will lead us by, you know, a fish hook into whatever, a dystopian future that exists. And then there are people on the right who believe that sort of the inversion of that same principle, which is people need a leader because they intrinsically need leadership. Otherwise, they will just go astray. People are born sinful. They need, you know, church or guidance in that way, or they will automatically choose the worst path because that's the nature of them. And so it speaks to a genuine distrust of people in general.
Okay.
But then the reality is they get in their car and they drive to and from work every day, trusting every person in traffic, regardless of the fact that there are car accidents all the time, that all someone has to do is cross a yellow line that we've all agreed on, which is the very act of government. I mean, government is the yellow line between two lanes of traffic. It is an agreed upon set of circumstances so that we can get on with our lives and accomplish things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It's a standard that we all adhere
to.
Totally.
And so people don't believe for a second, whatever reason, they're like, I don't trust people. But then they get in their car and they travel at 50 miles an hour opposite someone going the opposite direction at 50 miles an hour and trust that person randomly isn't just going to drive across that center line and smash into them. They don't think for a second. They might think there'll be an accident, but they don't think that somebody, they think that's A, rare and doesn't concern them on their way to work so much so that they're texting, they're talking on the phone. They've got 100 other reasons why they don't worry about every other person. That level of distrust is a myth. They don't distrust or have a lack of respect for the abilities of other people. Otherwise, they would never be able to leave the house. And the same thing is true of government. I don't believe in government at all, blah, 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 blah. But then a tornado hits and they full on expect the protections of, you know, of the federal government and the National Guard. And,
sure.
And or we're threatened on something like 9/11. And they go, I don't believe in government employees, but we need to send soldiers who are government employees into a war zone to solve this problem for us. And they absolutely have faith and belief in them. So I think it's a fiction. We're going to take some calls. 1-800-STEPH-12. Have you been experiencing this blowback reaction? Have you seen, have right-wing friends of yours started to come up with, you know, are they worried about the man on donkey problem? Notice in all these equations, though, and I take great offense at this as being sexist, you don't hear women will marry a donkey. You don't hear a lot of them. What about women marrying their little sons? They don't. It's always men marrying little girls, a guy marrying his dog, a guy marrying his car, a guy marrying his donkey. What?
Because we're smarter.
What?
And more humane and more...
On that sexist note, we'll be back right after
this.
What's
the word? More...
discriminating?
Less icky?
That's great. I would disagree because apparently that's the biggest problem they have is with two men together, regardless of what Michael Wiener will say. We'll be back right after this with your calls. 1-800-STEPH-12, blazing through the first hour, even though we have no cameras here currently.
Who needs cameras?
We've got this Ustream up. I think we'll fire up a Google chat or something like that if we really get stuck in the next hour, and so everybody can participate and be in on this. We'll be back.
What's all that noise?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
What you have to say. You get caught up in traffic because every day's a bad day. What do you do? You don't want to cause a scene.
But if you I'm going to keep listening to this. This is how I solve problems in traffic. This is what you do. Look them in the eye and say, see, we can do that because it's not on the air right now. You can't see what I'm doing. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephen the Mooks one last day before they come back from vacation.
Super sad.
Yeah.
I has a sad.
We thank them a lot, though, for going out of town so that DOMA could be struck down. I mean, it really would not have been struck down had it not been for this. And by the way, let me read a little bit of story. One of a state rep in Philadelphia, Democrat from Philadelphia, a guy named Brian Sims, was attempting to commemorate the Supreme Court's marriage ruling during the unanimous consent portion of the House session. His speech was shut down by Representative Daryl Metcalf, a Republican from Butler, the Butler County District, using a procedural maneuver. He just denied him the right to speak using a procedural maneuver. Metcalf's reasoning, you know why he did it?
Why?
I did not believe that as a member of that body I should allow someone to make comments such as he was preparing to make that ultimately were just open rebellion against what the Word of God has said. What God has said and just open rebellion against God's law, Metcalf explained to Newsworks. On Thursday, however, Sims took his open rebellion against God a step further. He and State Representative Steve McCarter, a Democrat from Montgomery County, introduced legislation to provide civil marriage equality for same-sex couples in Pennsylvania. After Wednesday's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, it is past time for Pennsylvania to join the 12 states, soon to be 13 because of California, and the District of Columbia that already provide the basic measures of equality and dignity to their residents. This evening, I took to the podium to ask my colleague, Pennsylvania State Representative Daryl Metcalf, be admonished for his embarrassing behavior both on the House floor and in subsequent interviews throughout the day, he said on his Facebook. Without asking, I was joined at the podium by the whole of the Democratic caucus, and I'm certain there were several Republican members who stood with me in solidarity as well. Metcalf was not reprimanded because his comments were not made on the House floor, the secondary, you know, his follow-up to why. Because he basically did it, but he didn't say why he was doing it. He just used a procedural maneuver to stop him from talking. He didn't actually... And this is that open filibuster, tell me what you really think. I don't, you know, that's... It, say what you, you know, will on the right about... I'm sorry, her last name's escaping me. Wendy Davis?
Davis.
In Texas, who did an 11-hour filibuster... On topic, never eating or drinking, never leaving her podium, never resting
Amazing.
On it, the entire time, saying that she was using a, you know, a political maneuver to stop something that she felt was egregious, but she went through the process of doing it and openly spoke of that. You know, and you have these silent fake filibusters on the right in the House or in the Senate, which happen all the time, which is either putting an anonymous hold on something, which is amazing in a democracy. I don't know how in the world that is okay. Like an anonymous hold on any bill to me is antithetical to democracy on such a, I mean, there should be a website that just goes, this is who put the anonymous hold on this.
But that's amazing to me that they can just
get away
hold
with
something up without right. actually standing behind why they're holding something.
Well, speaking of that, let's go to Jill in Maryland. The immigration bill, of course, passing the Senate, and then Boehner responded with, yeah, whatever.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi. Listen all the time. Love you guys.
Thanks.
Yeah, I have the capital number to the operator, which I take a lot of satisfaction in calling when I get upset or angered by someone. I call all over the United States anyone and let them know that what they've done is disapproving or upsetting, but, you know, respectfully.
Right.
This time when I called Boehner about this immigration bill, I got a person, not a message, and he abruptly stopped me and said, well, he's choosing to bring up the House bill, not the Senate bill. This is his right. And this is democracy. And it kind of threw me off a little bit. So what, how does he get away with this? And
well, it's fairly common.
There's so much, I mean, support on a Senate bill for comprehensive immigration. And just like everything else.
I'll tell you, and we're right up against the end. I appreciate you bringing up and asking the question. And we'll discuss this more in the next hour. Because the immigration bill is very important and quite contentious. And will be the next big fight. But I will say this, it is fairly normal procedure for the Senate to come up with their own bill, the House to come up with their own bill, and them in committee to meet in the middle and craft a kind of Franken bill that will get through. The problem is, the question is not, will he present the bill? Is he going to do that? Is, will they get a vote on it? Will it actually happen? And how close is it to the Senate bill? Ask those questions. You'll have to get an answer. If you go, why isn't he taking up the Senate bill? He'll go, because I'm the House Speaker. And that's enough of a reason he can hang up. That's the reality. So we'll talk about that in the next hour. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in all day. No, just for the next hour.
Oh, come on, guys. It's so simple. Maybe you need a refresher course. Hey, it's all ball bearings nowadays.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Al Sparks, filling in for Steph. Today we've been blazing through sans cameras.
Yeah.
If you're looking for us in Current, you're not going to find us right now. You're going to see a documentary on opiates and then the negative effect on farmers in Guatemala. I'm kidding. I don't know what Vanguard special they're doing right now, but I'm just kind of conflating the three that I've seen in the last month. One. I'm streaming just a single image just so the chat can be up and running at howsparks.com/ustreamhi. Going straight for my iPad. And
Not a good advertisement for Google Hangout, because
no,
we were just
trying to
do it, and
we're
pretty tech savvy.
And it was being a little very wonky.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not allowing.
Not a big fan right now.
You're on a laptop, I'm on an iPad, and both of them are supposed to work, and neither of them do.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of curious. So, regardless, Tony's trying to work it on his phone.
Or as we would say.
But I have an Android phone, so.
That's true. So, of course, it worked there.
Of
course. Still Microsoft system, you know what I mean? Make sure it only works on our stuff. That's why people will buy our stuff. And then people go, you mean it only works on that stuff? I'm not playing with that. That's stupid.
A lot of nothing.
I'm not going to get in a fight with you, Tony. The immigration bill passed a huge hurdle in the Senate.
Yeah, it didn't get to 70, but it got close.
68.
And the idea was, just to give a little background, is if you can get 70 votes on it, then perhaps we could get some bipartisan momentum to get something going in the House.
Mm-hmm.
And House Speaker John Boehner comes out and says,
nah,
we're going to do our own thing, and I'm going to stick with my GOP majority and what we decide we want to do, and there's not going to be a path to citizenship.
Right.
I mean, that's really what he's saying at this point.
Well, and then you have Republican Senator Jeff Sessions, of course, a Republican from the Keebler Tree district. he actually came out and said because they had 68, not 70, that, you know, it was an embarrassment because it wasn't truly bipartisan, and that kind of thing. He had Lindsey Graham coming out and defending the vote. Like, I'll take 68 any day, and that's a solid thing. It's
for
funny
this
how,
Senate, that's great.
Oh, it's, but let's keep in mind. It used to be a simple majority. Then it was 60. Now what, we're at 70 now? 70 is a legitimate vote? At what point?
You got to get everybody.
What was different between now and when a simple majority used to be okay? What's the difference between who's in office? What color is the skin of the person in office but it has nothing to do with that.
But what's interesting, in National Journal, I sort of had this in my news break that didn't happen, but the National Journal says that more than 70% of congressional districts represented by GOP congressmen have very small Hispanic populations.
Right.
10% or less.
So they're not worried about it.
And then those in states like Texas and California with larger Hispanic constituencies tend to be very politically conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not concerned about the political ramifications of whether or not they get immigration reform done, because it doesn't bode well for them personally within the districts that they represent. So they'll get reelected if they don't do immigration.
Sure.
As opposed to...
They can count on the racist reflex of the people that they're surrounded
by
anyway.
As opposed to going with the larger consensus of the population that we have a big problem that we need to fix, because we have 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country, mm-hmm, that would like a legitimate path to citizenship.
Right. And we're talking about a $900 billion savings in over 10 years.
But I got an idea. Let's build a fence.
Right.
Let's just build a giant fence.
It's the size of from whatever, the Gulf.
That's
to
gonna
Chicago.
Work. Yeah. Put 40,000 people every 1,000 feet along the border and build a fence.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Because that worked in Germany and whatnot. That's the fiction. That's actually how it got through the Senate, by ratcheting that stuff up. So they ratchet it up and they add all this nonsense, and the House ignores it, and the hardliners in the Senate come out against it as if it's, you know, amnesty and open doors.
Now, see, this makes me think there is something to the way that we did health care reform. And just stick with me here, is that we did kind of run simultaneous tracks in the House and the Senate. And the Senate bill was less of what we wanted than the House bill.
Right.
The House bill tended to be more progressive. And then we married them, and we ended up getting better terms through reconciliation. So when everybody said all we did was focus on health care, for some reason, that's actually kind of a good thing. Because if you look at what's happening with immigration, because all the priorities are so diverse at this point, you can get the Senate to get something done, and the House goes, we're going to do our own thing. And they didn't run on the same track. So the parallel track, I think, in the House and the Senate, where it seemed very one-tracked at the time, actually was a really good strategy in terms of getting something done.
Right, right. But the problem is, too, is, I guess there's an intrinsic level of sort of class warfare involved in healthcare, because you keep hearing that you're going to take from me and my money and give it to somebody for free, that this idea that healthcare, you know, even though it's not single payer and stuff, has this, you hear people talk about it and they're like, well, you're taking money from me and you're going to give it to somebody else. Never mind the fact that
we already do.
You already do. When people go to the emergency room, what effectively that bill's getting put on your shoulders.
Absolutely. We already do.
In the worst financial way possible, with the most egregious, and the hospitals and the insurance providers can make up that number.
To pricing at all.
And the story, you know, that just came out about all the hospitals just kind of price fixing on that whatever, a procedure from one place to another, the quality isn't different at all, but the price can go from a difference of like $5,000 to $150,000.
It's totally arbitrary.
It's absurd.
But a lot of that is to make up for the charity care, because a lot of people don't have health insurance or health coverage because they can't afford it, not because they don't want it, because we've done a lot of those surveys and asked a lot of those questions.
Right.
That people end up getting it because it's unaffordable, and they end up going to the emergency room or getting hospital care they can't afford, and then those people who do have health insurance, their premiums go up to help pay for that, or the hospitals overinflate their prices to help cover the cost of charity care.
I also think it's a trust issue. I think a lot of people don't trust insurance companies when it comes to health care, because they made such a machine of removing your care right when you need it.
Of course.
You know, it was a standardized way of doing business that as soon as you need the health care that you've been paying into for however long, suddenly we'll find a typo, or the fact that you had, a wart or laryngitis or something when you were in high school, and that's reason enough that, that's a precursor to cancer and you should have known that.
Or you didn't disclose it on your application because, frankly, it's irrelevant.
Right, and because you didn't care. Like, you're like, how's every sore throat germane to, I didn't go to the doctor for that sore throat or what have you. That was a school nurse, silly like that. But that's going to be the reason why.
Of course.
You're not going to pay for the rehab after my amputation, because somehow you're saying I lied on my form. Never mind the fact that all during the time I'm signing this, you're supposed to provide, you know, these services if and when I need them, and then suddenly you renege on that based on a standard you had not set forth as important to you. You don't have to refund all my premiums.
Oh, no.
You never see a point where they're like, oh, well, we can't give you these services. We'll just
but
give you
your
money
back. Yeah.
Yeah, that happened. And so I think a lot of people, had they trusted insurance companies, would have actually been willing to spend at least a little more and maybe even say, I can afford health insurance. It's tough, but I'll do it because I'll guarantee it's there when I need it. But the vast majority of times, the horror story after horror story was that people were, you know, they find out they've got cancer and suddenly their insurance company's like, nah, you know what? You didn't put your middle name on this form the third time we made you fill it out. You put your middle initial. We don't know that's the same person.
It's an intentionally a maze, too.
Totally.
I mean, one of the things we learned during the healthcare fight is that they intentionally make you go through levels and levels and levels and layers of conversations with people as you contest these sorts of things, with the idea that you'll get frustrated and give up.
Right.
And it's intentionally frustrating and confusing because they just know human nature is not to continue that fight.
Yeah, especially if you're fighting cancer at the same time.
Exactly.
Or you have a relative.
Or you have a family member
who's
fighting cancer.
And you're just trying to get them from the bed to the bathroom and back three times a day.
Well, the best part is they'll cover some but not all. So you've paid your premiums, and then they'll cover only part of what you need, or they'll say the other treatment's experimental and they don't cover it.
Right.
So you've paid all your premiums, you expect coverage, and then you end up whacked with a bill of something like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars because your chemo's not covered.
Right.
Or because your CAT scans aren't covered or whatever it happens to be, because they just don't want to cover them.
Right. And then again, I think that creates a generalized distrust in people getting insurance in the first place, because it's a very high cost. And if you don't think it's going to pay out, nobody's going to go to a car dealership and go, okay, and they go, okay, guess what? We're going to sell you this car. You keep making payments on it. And as soon as you get that job you need to commute to, we'll give you the vehicle. And you pay into it for years and years and years. And then you finally go, oh, I got a job. I can commute across town. I finally need that car I've had on layaway this entire time. Trust me, I know it's a stretch, but you understand.
It's good,
it's a mechanical
though. It's a good
thing.
Analogy.
I'm paying into something, and when I finally need it, I show up and they go, we don't think you're a good enough driver. We decided not to give you the car. Or, you were a day late with your seventh payment, or you tried to pay your other one early, and that's out of cycle, and so it was applied to the payment the month before where you double paid, and we refunded it before, but we didn't count it towards the following month. That was a big one when they would do that. Is you go, I'm going to be 5 days ahead on my insurance payment for each quarter, whatever, and you were too far ahead, and what they register it as a double pay on the one before, like a mistake, and they refund that premium later after the fact and make it look like you missed that quarter's payment.
Amazing.
Like you didn't pay it at all, even though you paid it early. And then they use that, by the way, they just hold it. They keep you in the system. They don't kick you out. They don't, which is what they should do if there's a problem, or at least contest
right.
the thing. Go, okay, next quarter, you didn't pay that last one. I go, yes, I did. And you could go, no, they wait 2 years till you actually need to not die. And then they go, yeah, we're not paying for that. You didn't even pay that quarter. You skipped an entire thing. We just noticed that you didn't pay for that.
The part that gets me is every time we have these conversations, people forget how screwed up the system is now.
Right.
Right? And they complain about healthcare reform because of all the things they think it's going to do. And what's frustrating is that, why don't you take a look at how messed up the system is now? We're making improvements, and it may not be perfect, but it sure as heck is going to be a lot better than where we are now.
Well, it already is. And right. And that's the hard part. Again, it's like that Facebook caller before. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls. They're starting to line up, especially around this topic. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We're also going to discuss the Trayvon Martin thing, the Paula Deen fallout. She lost Walmart yesterday. Man, if Walmart is taking a powder
Walmart gives
from
up
you,
on you.
Yeah. Tom Cruise had to go to the Walmart event that Hugh Jackman hosted in Arkansas or wherever the heck their headquarters are, and basically kowtow to Walmart last month. That's how big it is. You got to go and kiss Walmart's butt if you want to make sure they'll carry your movies and give them shelf space.
Well, I'm going to guess that Walmart was concerned about losing their African-American shoppers.
Absolutely. You bet they were. And that's a huge deal. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show and your calls. 1-800-STEPH-12.
It's not radio. It's Stephanie Miller.
Gene Simmons' version of Firestarter.
You played something I know.
Yeah, but this is, you know the original version. You probably don't know that Gene. This is Gene Simmons from Kisses.
You gotta ruin it all for me, don't you?
Oh, it's a good version.
I finally feel semi-cool.
I think this makes sense, though. The guy breathes fire. I mean, this of all people to cover this song,
that
I think it fits.
You?
That makes sense to me. And by the way, there's so many other stories that are coming out. And I don't know if you did you hear about the fact that a senior White House national security advisor has was informed yesterday that he is under investigation for as the leaker of the Iranian cyber attack story that was in the news, that I think it was the New York Times.
I saw the story. I don't know the details.
Yeah. So apparently the story came out. There was an attack, a cyber attack, a literally cyber warfare attack by our military against the Iranian centrifuge process. And by the way, my favorite story.
I remember that.
Yes. And one of my favorite stories about one of the cyber attacks that happened was that the centrifuges were all spun down in the factory. Literally the whole factory was spun down to stoppage.
Okay.
And then every computer in the place started playing Thunderstruck by AC/DC. This was an Iranian hack that happened last year. Awesome.
Yeah.
I just, like, to me, that's what a hacker does. A hacker goes, I don't like weapons, and I think I got better things to do than worry about whether some rogue nation or some established nation is going to destroy me. So I'm going to get in there and shut down your Defense Department attack systems and then let you know I did it by playing Firestarter by Gene Simmons. And whatever, that's the idea. But they played Thunderstruck. You've been Thunderstruck! Yeah, Tony's looking for it right now, I'm sure. You have to. But the story of that came out, and the administration, much like, they've caught a lot of hell. And this is interesting because you've heard these stories about how the Obama administration has been so anti-leak that they've been, vehemently against the, leaks, and that they've been more egregious in prosecuting leaks than any other administration. Now, I would argue that the Bush administration used leaks as a strategic attack point.
Okay.
But the Bush administration, one of the reasons why the number of of prosecutions or them coming down on leakers was because they were actually using them as a tactic on purpose. That they were either going after Valerie Plame or they were leaking what would be eventually false information to people like Judith Miller about Iraq's WMDs. Those were all leaks on the same level as these things, but they were used as strategic manipulation of the news. They turned out to be false. They turned out to be propaganda.
Okay.
Leaked propaganda. And so saying that the Obama administration has, 300 times more people, well, there were three and now there's seven, that kind of thing is really what we're looking at. But this particular story coming out, and I'll find it in one second, insofar as the details on it, but they're charging a member of, essentially Obama's inner circle of national security advisors as being the leak. Now, he was also the guy who was in charge of instigating it, and it was his idea. So it sounds like bragging to me. It sounds like a guy talking to the press going, by the way, we shut down their centrifuges using a cyber attack last year, and oop. It reeks of that as opposed to some sort of, overtly, insidious thing. It just sounds like somebody being, bragging about the fact that they had a part in this. And he's going to be prosecuted. The DOJ is going to come after him about this, and this is going to be a trial. And he will, I don't know if he's retired. He's since retired. So this is going to be a straight-up civilian prosecution that goes on. It's not going to be a court-martial. It's not going to be under military. I don't believe so legally.
If you're retired.
Right. So, the question is, he told of this cyber attack or whatever. This is almost the same type of information as the information that Snowden gave out about our response to North Korea and how we are, the story that came out that we had somebody in the North Korean, administration or whatever in that circle that was helping
us. International news that he's been leaking, not necessarily the domestic surveillance news.
Exactly. That particular piece of news is almost exactly the same piece of news that this leaking about the cyber attack is. It's specifically speaking openly about what would be a covert military action. Now, I guess it's a question for people. Do you believe we should be allowed to have covert military actions?
How can we not?
Well, I would like to know, because some people seem to be under that impression. They seem to, and this is the difference. People are saying Snowden shouldn't be charged under the Espionage Act. I don't think he should be charged under the Espionage Act in regard to the outing of the prison program, the NSA prison program. I think that's different. I think that's, you know, somebody saying, I believe this to be illegal or unconstitutional, and I think it's criminal. But the other information?
Right. The stuff he's giving to China and possibly Russia.
Right.
And the rest of the information.
Yeah. That qualifies. And it qualifies in the same grounds as this. We'll come back right after this with your calls. Also, the Trayvon Martin trial is going on right now.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Well, you won't miss it now. We're back on the air. That's right. Current TV fans, turn your TVs back on. We are here. Not that you wouldn't want to be on watching Vanguard, because I actually am a big fan of that documentary series. They're using it as space filler.
Oh, it's a great series.
Yeah.
It's just we've seen them over
many times. They need more fundage. They
That's
actually,
okay.
Yeah, I think Vanguard needs to be able to get some strength and be able to purchase more documentaries that are either out there or make some more of their own. I used to love the America Undercover ones on HBO. HBO had America Undercover. It was
you know what they have now is Vice.
Yes.
Which is really good.
Well, Vice, the magazine, has their own documentaries, absolutely.
Right, and they're HBO's airing
carrying
their
them
series.
Now, right.
Yeah,
because America Undercover, which used to be really amazing stuff about, you know, everything from sex trafficking to drugs to whatever, like this really harsh look at the, you know, at problems we have in this country and how to deal with them, eventually just became taxicab confessions. It became, you know what I mean? Like, let's just put a camera in a cab and have people talk about their sex lives while they're still drunk and then sign a waiver and then make and pretend that's a documentary. Which it's not. It's embarrassing and stupid and just prurient and ridiculous. Okay, so here's the headline. Oops, company lied about outsourced NSA background checks. Okay, the federal investigators have told lawmakers they have evidence that USIS, the contractor that screened Edward Snowden for his top secret clearance, and this is emphasis added, repeatedly misled the government about the thoroughness of its background checks, according to people familiar with the matter. The alleged transgressions are so serious that a federal watchdog indicated he plans to recommend that the Office of Personnel Management, which oversees most background checks, end ties with USIS unless it can show it is performing responsibly, the people said. Cutting off USIS could present a major logistical quagmire for the nation's already jammed security clearance process. I think there are too many people with top secret clearance anyways. It's a little...
It's something like a half a million.
Yeah, it's a certain point.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. That's clearly, here's the thing. It's almost like how drinks have just gotten bigger,
and a
medium drink is now what an extra large was, and they try to convince you that, you know, the difference between a reasonable beverage and a gallon jug is a nickel, and somehow that's become normal-ish.
Yeah.
The top secret has fallen into that, top in air quotes.
Yeah.
This is a top secret matter, meaning you can know and you can know and they can know and Dave can know and anybody who cleans the trash cans can know because he's got to have top secret clearance because he can actually see unshredded documents. And so anybody in his division can know because those trash cans might be dumped into those trash cans at some point. And so he's got to have clearance. So we got to screen those folks for clearance. And as we're adding clearance upon clearance upon clearance,
right.
Then at a certain point you're like, what is there above top secret now? Do we have to add a secondary classification? Are we
awesomely
surprised?
We've gone,
well, look at the CIA to the NSA. What's the difference to some degree? I mean, the CIA was enough of an organization. Then we added the NSA, and then we added Homeland Security. And so we keep stacking these things up because the baseline gets broader and broader on these things.
Well, but here's where the failure is on this, and this is what's interesting, is that this is not the screening for Booz Allen Hamilton.
Right.
And in that screening, and we reported this last week, that Snowden lied about his education on several levels and said that he attended certain programs and had participated in certain qualification programs, was going to get his master's in some sort of computer science, and he attended Johns Hopkins. Like, he kind of fudged everything within his educational background and somehow convinced the screeners, the personnel screeners at Booz Allen Hamilton, to overlook that, or he convinced them that it was all appropriate. So he'd fudged that within that process.
Hmm.
But now we're finding out that when he went and worked for the government, that the contractor that screened him for the government did a rotten job and then lied about doing a rotten job.
Right.
So several steps along the way, the vetting process broke down.
Right. This is and you know, this is going to be a continuing issue.
And they didn't just screen this one guy.
Right. They screened tens of thousands.
They're
of
a contractor that screens for
right, exactly.
government.
And this is the question.
Clearance.
And this is brought up. You know, Crooks and Liars brought this up. Daily Kos has brought this up. I brought this up. You have brought this up. That at a certain point, the problem we have is when we start talking about how the federal government or the government in general is somehow bad and inefficient and incapable. That the always the better version, because it's cheaper and more expedited, is to go to a private company.
This is a private company.
Yeah. That when you outsource these things and then you're shocked later when the things that happen at private companies happen, but with crucial and
dire circumstances
attached to them.
Consequences.
Yeah. Then, I mean, people act surprised or something, or somehow that it, then they'll blame the federal government for outsourcing to that company. Well, at some point, you got to go, no, no, no. Let's keep this inside. That actually, the reality is that the DMV model of government sucking is actually pretty great, because the millions of people who get their driver's licenses every year and who deserve to have them and go through the testing process and all that, if you want to think that there would be better drivers on the road because private DMVs would allow fewer drivers on the road, you're out of your mind. They would, you just have to, they charge you an extra $20.
Well, and there would be a profit motive.
Yeah, to not pass the test. But then the amount of people that the DMV deals with the myriad of issues, from multiple tickets to brand new drivers to registration to all the affecting elements of getting this entire country on the road, the way the DMV does it is almost magic in how well it's actually run. And as annoying as it is to go down there and do it, it won't be any different if you – I mean, the same people who go, I hate going to the DMV or whatever. Yeah, tell me what it's like when you go to get your cell phone fixed at a place. And tell me that you'd rather it be much more like that process. Sometimes you have a great experience. Sometimes it's awful. Sometimes you break your phone and you bring it in and they think you're lying and broke it yourself on purpose and don't want to – and you want a free upgrade and you just did it that way. And so they won't let you, and so you have to talk to a manager.
The truth is, we have just as much trouble in the private sector as
right.
we do in the – public sector,
right.
and it's just easier to bitch and moan about the public
right.
sector.
And the benefits that we get from, you know, working with the public sector is that we genuinely have the outcome being the most important part. The outcome and service being is really the most important part of this, not profit, not the financial motivation of it. And the problem with a lot of modern Republican lawmakers and the Democratic lawmakers that follow them is that somehow by cheapening as much as possible on the federal level, they're somehow, that's the profit motive. They've literally put the profit motive into a public sector idea, meaning that if we can cut the price so far down that it's almost ineffective, we're somehow saving money, and that's like gaining money instead of actually getting a service that you pay for. And you're like basically undercutting programs so that they can't actually provide.
Be effective.
Yeah. That effectiveness is the purpose. And the profit, and there is a profit to federal government and
well, the
city
money
government.
Goes back into running your government.
Well, I mean, what I mean is there is a profit from it, but it is non-monetary, which is the benefit to the citizen.
Oh, sure. But when there is money,
yes.
it goes back into the system.
Exactly.
As opposed to going to shareholders.
Right. Or overseas, which is, you know, the biggest problem with modern corporate practices
right.
is that a lot of them aren't American companies anymore. And this concept of protecting the corporation at the, you know, at the expense of the public government or public safety or waterways or aquifers, and this idea that, well, you're getting in the way of progress. I mean, Mitch McConnell's bringing up this whole thing about how the president's climate address, which was fundamentally ignored by the press this week.
What happened at the same
fundamentally,
time?
Fundamentally, didn't matter. The Trayvon Martin case was on, so what? There's always a secondary.
No, I'm saying they're probably, like, they went to something less
yeah,
significant.
Oh, that's what I mean.
Right.
They were covering lots of things. And again, the Voting Rights Act stuff came out, and they were, you know, when John Lewis was being interviewed on all the stations, and that's very important, and I get it. However, not crucial and not a, it's not solved that day. The problem was started that day. The solution was not coming. This was a news story about solutions, which we need more so than we know what the problem is in the Voting Rights Act. Like that was, and that will play out over time. This was probably one of the most fundamentally important speeches of the president's, two terms. This is a drastic shift in how he's going to address.
But not sexy.
Well, totally.
And that's why it doesn't get covered.
I think breathing is sexy, and I think we're going to all want our grandkids to be able to do it.
But that's the problem with giving a speech about climate change legislation,
right,
is that the media...
It reeks of Al Gore.
The media can't figure out how to sex it up. And
right.
So you want to, you know, air a speech about climate change legislation...
Which is why the Weather Channel aired the whole thing, because they know how to make weather sexy.
Yeah.
And they know what they're talking about. This lines up with the coverage that they've been seeing, that everybody that works at the Weather Channel looks at this all the time, sees the big board, looks at hurricane season, looks at tornado season, and go, this is getting worse. The last decade, the hottest on record, it's enormous.
And
problems.
They understand it.
Miami's going to be underwater by the end of the century, fully underwater. Like, this is bad. And the president comes out and goes, we've got to solve this. I'm not going to be a president who ignores this. As a president, as a father, this is too important to pass up. And the reality is Mitch McConnell comes out and says this will hamstring growth. This will limit, you know, this is what they're saying about, you know, cap and trade and these kind of things, is that you're slowing down growth. That somehow we only compete in a profit margin against countries in the world, and that's our only measure of success, is how much money the top line of a company can take out of
the company.
What about
the growth of vegetation?
Right.
What
about the
growth
of
foliage?
of children once they're born. Like, you know, knock yourself out with all your pro-life amendments, but, you know, you're literally fighting for, when you're not fighting against a woman's right to actually be in control of her body in a situation where she might actually die, but you're also fighting for the births of children that you hope choke to death.
Yeah.
By the time they have children.
If I'm not mistaken, we have a significant increase in allergies and asthma and on bronchial issue. I mean, we're just, you know, the children today are now.
Let's take a break, and we're going to take some calls when we get back. Because you're absolutely right. Like, I don't need you to believe in climate change as a theory to be on board with all this stuff, because 100,000 kids are sent to the emergency room with asthma-related issues due directly to pollution every year. You don't have to care if it's changing the environment. You don't have to care if it's causing flooding.
You should care if it's killing our kids.
Yeah, exactly. That's enough. That's enough in and of itself. So if you don't care because you're stopping the coal jobs in your area, I'm sorry, those jobs can't be allowed to come at the expense of the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness of everybody who's downriver. We'll be back.
Ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourselves for a shock.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Shut up and never say anything again as long as you live.
When you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Very good. There you go.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Nothing?
Is
Big Lebowski.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Which I've never seen all the way through.
What? Don't talk to me the rest of the show.
I know.
Don't talk to me the rest of the show.
I only saw it like 3-4 months ago the first time I saw it, so. I'm terrible.
Just take it easy, man.
That was on the Rolling Stones list of top 10 stoner movies.
Sure, but I mean, I think that's a low-tier way of looking at that movie.
No,
because
but they just
he's
had a whole,
character, right.
Sure, they had a whole pot issue, though, and they had the top 10
sure.
stoner movies.
Was Dude, Where's My Car in there? Because it seems to be included in a lot of those issues. I mean,
no,
it,
there
probably
was
not
a,
if they had Up in Smoke and...
There was a Harold
no
and Kumar Go to White Castle, Dazed and Confused.
Sure.
Which is my all-time favorite.
Right.
That movie I haven't seen all the way through.
Oh, my goodness.
Matthew McConaughey's creepiest line ever. That's what I love about these high school girls. I keep
older.
Being older, and they keep staying the same age. Like, wow. And everybody knows that dude, and you know that we had a guy like that who was used to hang out near campus in Frankfurt near my high school all the time. Like, you know, he's probably graduated 2 years before, 3 years before. He's like 21 and just dating 16-year-old girls or whatever. Just and always dating a 16-year-old. He turned 22.
Still 16.
Yeah.
I've given that advice to some of my male friends. Like, if you're in your late 30s and you're still going to keggers, like, you're that guy.
Yeah.
Like, do you want to be that guy? Because the girls, the party, 21, 22, look at you and say, why is he here? Who's that guy?
Yeah, most of them do. Yeah. Some of them don't. That's the problem. He wouldn't keep coming if it didn't work. You know what I mean?
True.
Nobody keeps going back to a dry well.
True.
I mean, yeah. So
when you wake up in the dorm, it hasn't been a good night.
No, we have a. I would take issue with that. that being said, let's take some of the calls because we on a lot of different issues. Let's go to Rock in Washington talking about climate change. Hey, Rock.
Hey, good morning, my fellow Americans. I appreciate you taking my call.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that the problem was they didn't cover it because Obama didn't follow the agenda that's been set out by the left, you know, went from global warming to global climate change, and now he's going back to global warming, and that's why they didn't cover it, because he didn't follow along the lines, you know, and you know, mm-hmm. I'm not left, I'm not right, I'm in the middle, but I kind of listen to both sides, and I think that, you know, he went off narrative. I don't know who wrote the speech or whatever, but I think that's kind of why it didn't get covered so much in the regular
really?
You know, new cycle.
I don't know that there was a drastic shift in tone from global climate change to global warming. I think he mentioned that the last decade was the hottest on record, which is absolutely true, and that the trend points that way. But I don't know that that varies drastically from the general scientific consensus on the idea. I don't know what you mean by being off message.
Yeah, well, what I mean by being off message is, you know, as far as what I've been hearing, you know, on the, I listen to you guys on Sirius, mm-hmm. and you guys are going to, you know, it's shifting to the weather patterns and, you know, it's affecting, and not so much that as far as heat and stuff like that, you know, I mean, it's shifted to the weather patterns and it's caused, more erratic and forceful, storms and stuff like that. And, you know, he went back to, you know, it's overheating the planet.
I think both of those actually happened simultaneously. He discussed that the last decade was the hottest on record, but that also we're dealing with more egregious storms and that you have to look at the people in Oklahoma or any places, you know, where people are in areas where the water is rising drastically and faster than they even thought it would. I don't know that there was a separation between those two thoughts, though. I think it wasn't covered because I think there's a continuing corporate interest against any shift in it, and nobody will want to change anything because it's, you know, it's like telling somebody to go on a diet, it doesn't really work or take hold, or they don't take it seriously until they've had open-heart surgery. And we're getting to that point. You know, people are getting the signs of a heart attack as far as the weather goes, but they're not taking it that seriously. That's why it's a cutting edge speech. That's why it is a big deal that it happened when it did. Do you not believe it? Do you not believe that global climate change is occurring?
You know, I have a total different theory on what happens on that, and it's kind of out in the crazy field. But you know, I think that the part. What happened, what could be happening is, you know, I mean, we slowly, our rotation around the sun could slowly be degrading, and you know, we're getting a little closer and a little closer, and then the magnetic reactions from the coronal mass ejections cause, different magnetic waves, and once we get so close, it'll fry whatever's on the planet, but that coronal mass ejection will react to our magnetic field and push it out a little farther.
Yes.
Like I said, it's a little on the...
Sure, but the exponential growth of heat that you're talking about would mean that the Earth would be in a death spiral into the sun on a continually exponential level. The other thing too is that coronal solar storms have not increased in any magnitude over the last decade in keeping with the rise in temperature on the Earth. It doesn't
matter. No. What I meant is the sun gets close or the
Earth gets closer.
Closer.
No, I understand what you're saying. That's not actually.
Once we get so close, you know, I mean, the magnetic fields would react with those ejections and push it a little farther, and that's what, you know, how it fried, you know, if we go from the dinosaurs to the next people to the next, you know, and I think, I don't know, like I said, it's kind of in the left field, but.
Yeah, I would go with, Go with the problems you can fix, and if and in many ways, when you got 97% of scientists saying that we've got the gases that we're putting into the atmosphere are affecting the atmospheric reflection of heat and trapping heat on the planet, which is absolutely in keeping with historically how it's happened in the planet before, and keep on the same level as giant volcanic eruptions and those kind of things, the things we can't control, we owe it to ourselves to try and control it to some degree, to at least have that. How much time do we have left, Tony? About a minute and a half. I've got about a minute. You know what? There's a lot of people calling in about the climate change issue, and I want to deal with this on the other side of it because it's a big conversation. Plus, we're going to talk more about the Trayvon Martin trial is going on right now,
because
there are two conflicting versions of what's going on as far as the witnesses go. But the very least is that. The woman that saw this, says she saw the screaming directly, says that it was Trayvon doing it and that he was having his arms stuffed under his body after he'd been shot, essentially. And that the white witness is saying that it was the other way around and is saying that he assumed that the screaming was coming from Zimmerman and not him. He didn't actually see it, but he continually says repeatedly on the stand that he assumes, of course, that that must have been how it was. It's, you know... That's why this is such a contentious issue. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, and we're on Current with Jackie Schechner.
Well, hello, Mr. Fancy-Pants.
Welcome back. It's the Stephanie Miller Show, the final hour of the final day, as Jackie and I have been feeling.
I'm super sad.
It's been great, though, I have to say.
Sad panda.
Yeah. It's nice to be able to get on a long-range discussion about a lot of topics and stuff. And there's certainly been tons to cover this week, and we'll take your calls about the DOMA ruling in a little bit as well. There's an interesting response from... the Family Research Council, which is the most ironically named group in the world. It's just like the anti-homosexual society. Like at a
Can
certain
we tie
point,
it into the New Yorker cover, too?
Yes, we will discuss that, which is spectacular. But we were talking about climate change, and we're dealing with a bunch of that. Let's take some of the calls or whatever. Tom in Maryland says he can explain global warming. Hi, Tom.
Hi. It's not so much explain it, but give you a model.
Okay.
Okay, if you think of any device you have with audio that has an equalizer and you see the bars go up and down,
mm-hmm.
or better if you have experience with an oscilloscope like I'm sure your engineer has,
yep.
as you add power, as you turn up the volume, the highs go higher, the lows go lower. The highs are the forest fires we're now seeing, the lows are the record blizzards we had here in Washington
right.
a couple of years ago. It's not just that it's warming, so everything gets hotter. No, it's warming, and things, the highs go higher, the lows go lower, you get the hotter, you get the colder. Eventually, though, when you push your amplifier into saturation, everything goes up.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to hit saturation, because at that point, the planet will be unlivable.
Right. That's an excellent description. Thank you, Tom. He was right. He was able to do it. Let's go to Susan in Michigan. Hi, Susan.
Hello?
Hi. Yeah, welcome
Hi.
To the show.
Well, one thing I want to talk about climate change is that if you want to deny it, fine, but the proof is in the weather-related costs. And if you ask any actuary, any insurance company, look at their rates as a function of weather extremes. There's the proof for you. And the
yeah, it's
cost
going to keep
money.
Going up and keep going up, and they're looking out the long term over the next 20 years, and
exactly.
your premiums are going to pay as if it's going to get worse.
Right. They know what the future is. That's the point of an actuary. So they know what the odds are. They know what the future's holding, the trends.
I think that's part of, the American obesity epidemic is part of the reason why insurance premiums have gone up as drastically as they have over the last 20 years and why they continue to rise in spite of a lot of cost-cutting measures is because you can extrapolate outwards that people who are in that physical shape will have
right.
more physical problems later and earlier.
Right.
And will have less healthful years at the end of their life than somebody who isn't, obese, technically
right.
obese. And so that's why it's being treated as a disease now. That's why we're actually getting, a lot of drastic treatments for it because they're trying to mitigate that damage and bring
mm-hmm.
the cost down over time.
I have a real problem with that.
It's the same effect, though. If you really, thanks, Susan. I appreciate it.
I have a real problem with the AMA calling obesity a disease.
Right. Well, I think morbid obesity absolutely probably is. But I think it's more of a reaction to external toxic stimulus. But the toxic stimulus is something that is just mass quantities of something that is otherwise relatively normal. In high fructose corn syrup, extra fat and salt and stuff, processed foods having extraordinary amounts. I mean, a lot of people with type 2 diabetes are effectively, they're going, well, a lot of the symptoms and the actual disease itself can be mitigated by weight loss. Well, that means that your organs are in shock. It's not technically a disease in the same sense of the word that, you know, that the disease you have a genetic propensity towards, or if you have cancer due to an external, you know, stimulus, this, you're continually being poisoned and your body is reacting.
Yeah, but you're also making some choices.
That's true. But your choices oftentimes have been made over time to seem less egregious. You know, a soda, I'll give you an example. You drank Coke in the mid-80s when it was cane sugar. You drank a Coke starting in the 90s, it was high fructose corn syrup. You're drinking the same can of Coke, but the amount of sweetener your body is taking in has drastically been increased.
You know that soda's not good for you and you choose not to drink soda.
That's true. But what I'm saying is that your behavior stayed the same. The toxic input into your body was actually has risen over time. And the behavior, and trying to convince you that something that you drank for years and years and years that didn't really cause you a problem is suddenly causing you a problem, and your belief about it hasn't changed because it didn't used to do that. It's the same thing they're trying to convince people not to smoke, is because early when they smoked, it didn't make them cough that much, you know, or didn't have a negative effect.
Right, but we learned that over time. We learned that it was toxic and not good for you and that you should quit. And
I totally agree. I'm not excusing the behavior.
No, but I think that...
Explanation is not advocacy.
No, I understand.
This is a very important part of the discussion.
But I don't want to discount that within that argument, there are choices that you make.
And all the better because you have a chance to get out of it. You know, it's a difference between having, you know, a Chernobyl happen near you or having mesothelioma from asbestos and the like and something you didn't know about and suddenly caught up with you and now you're going to die because of it. This is actually a very positive aspect of the fact that diet and exercise can affect the outcome of type 2 diabetes, and that's a very healthful thing. The problem is we have a confluence of two things. One is lazy nutritional standards and this kind of denial that happens in the American society, and it ties right in. I think the obesity epidemic and our adversity to talking legitimately about our effect on the environment and climate change are totally interlinked, because the changing our behavior requires a lot of effort in both these areas, and it's way easier to just blame it on a disease and move on, or say this is just the planet happening. I guess the variety of responses that people have to it are indicative of that.
But let me just say that I would much rather that the AMA turn around and said, okay, let's work really hard about putting physical education back into schools.
Right.
And let's get fresh foods into the inner cities.
Sure.
And let's replace fast food restaurants with fresh choices. And let's teach kids about physical activity versus sitting on your butt watching television all day long. I mean, it's a multi-pronged approach.
I totally
agree. But instead of just saying, it's a disease.
Well, many of them are. But what they're dealing with, the problem is that there are people who are so far past that line where the recovery process to them is like the Chris Christie situation, where you're going to have to get, you know, either stomach stapling or getting it lassoed. You know.
But the answer isn't redefining it.
Right. Right. I agree.
That's not the answer.
I agree. You go into a really scary territory when lifestyle stuff becomes classified as a disease, because you also attach a level of helplessness to
it. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Let's go to Anthony in Cleveland. Hi, Anthony.
All right. Hell. I came across the station, I was flipping through the Sirius and heard you talking about the profit motive, and I'm a libertarian, member of the Libertarian Party, so I'm obviously a strong supporter of the free market.
Sure. But not a fair market. Go ahead.
What do you mean?
I'm messing with you. Go ahead.
No, actually, the market becomes unfair when the government gets involved and starts picking winners and losers. But
say corporations gather together and through price fixing and through monopolies actually participate in messing with the market the same way?
Yes.
And
is that
the government
most of the time trying to
mitigate that factor?
No. Actually, the government assists in the price fixing. If they don't have the government to go to say help us fix the prices, they don't have the ability to fix the prices.
That's not true.
Okay.
They fix it amongst each other all the time. What do you mean?
Wait a minute. We don't have a free market at this point in time. We have a government involvement. We have essentially state corporatism.
When did we have a free market?
We never really did have a free market, although it was freer before.
Freer to what?
freer compared to now.
But, I mean, freer for who? For the corporate holders or for the individual who's actually being acted on upon by it? Because what I'm saying is I don't necessarily buy the total government solution or the total free market solution. And libertarians tend to be, in my experience in this discussion, this kind of laissez-faire, financial utopians about this idea, which is childish, I think.
Okay. Because the evidence indicates corporations, this is why Adam Smith said, do not trust corporations when they get together and use the government to act upon their customers.
Sure, but that's not a governmental problem. That's a corporate takeover of government. That's fascism. And that I don't think we have any argument against that at all.
Okay. Here's the point I wanted to make with regard to the profit motive.
Right.
There was a evolutionary biologist some time ago that indicated what would cause you to rethink evolution. He said, essentially, I would need to see a rabbit fossil at the time of the dinosaurs. In other words, something so drastically different that would indicate that what we're thinking was wrong. So with regard to the profit motive, if there was something wrong with the profit motive in human history, the Soviet Union would exist, the United States would be in the dustbin of history. West Germany would be the economic basket case. East Germany would be have survived.
I completely disagree, and I think I have a reasonable argument as to why not. I think we have a structured form of socialism, for example, in this country, and as they do in West Germany, that is more moderated than let's say a communistic system, that is a more balanced approach to that. I think it's the imbalance of one direction or the other that actually causes the damage, because saying without a socialism-esque structure, we would still have the Wild West. That the Wild West of the United States was a totally free market where strong actors could act on weak actors without any regulation whatsoever. And the governmental interference in that factor saying, no, just because someone isn't armed or doesn't have the physical strength to fight back against an aggressor, we're setting a series of laws in place to make sure that happens. That's a form of government regulation and protection. And that's exactly the circumstance we're talking about. Just saying that the USSR, that communism, because communism doesn't exist or failed as a system, that somehow that means that the free market in total radical openness would, is an absurdity. Just like saying that the USSR, that the Soviet Union still exists in basic structure because Russia has become a gangster state.
But what we need to get to is why what happened. In other words, what were the factors that caused the United States to become the wealthiest nation the world's ever known and the Soviet Union to disappear? And
okay,
I'm suggesting
to
you.
Right, and I'll give you two reasons why that is. Number one is we were able to borrow more money in our war buildup than they were. That ultimately,
we were producing more.
One of the reasons we were producing more was because the greatest act of corporate welfare of the last 100 years was World War II. During the course of World War II, every industrial nation on the globe was basically driven back to dust. Japan, Germany, Eastern Europe, Russia itself, Great Britain, France, all these countries that were actually producing stuff on a level that would have competed with American industry, because they were all on the continent, were wiped out. During the World War II, the industrial capacity of Europe was dropped back to near zero. At the same time, the United States was not attacked. Our factories stayed in place, and they were subsidized by the government during that period, and by the bond structure, which is people paying into the government specifically for building of military ships and military items, that eventually rolled itself over into the production of cars, television sets, washing machines, and the like. American industry got a bootstrapping assist from World War II that other countries did not. That's why we were overproductive. That's why we had extra money to pay for that.
Well, then explain Germany, because Germany, as you indicated, was devastated. Okay, we have almost a perfect experiment as to what happens when the government is involved and when the government is not involved. West Germany became an economic powerhouse. East Germany,
yeah,
the whole country,
and
was
West
devastated.
Germany during that
East
process,
Germany did not.
West Germany does more government intervention into their own private industries than almost any other country on the planet. Didn't do austerity when they were telling everybody else to do it. Also, when their auto industries took a dip during 2008, they actually paid the auto companies to keep people on the job. They didn't go through the process of unemployment insurance, for example.
Well,
they just flat the government paid BMW and Mercedes to keep people employed during that time so that they wouldn't have the secondary thing of getting
the government
them off the rolling back. Yes,
the
they did.
The government didn't pay. The taxpayers paid. The taxpayers.
Right,
and that
you're
is
right.
No
you're right. If you want to split that hair, the taxpayer paid BMW and Mercedes to keep in business during a time they paid private industry to support them, and now those auto industries are solid again.
Okay.
I don't understand at what point you think that this. And we got to take a break because we're way over this. But I'm just saying.
I appreciate
that,
you listening to me, by the way. It was a good discussion.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, but I've heard this from the libertarian side of things, and I'm good friends with Doug Stanhope. He ran for the libertarian presidential candidate in 2008. We've gone back and forth with this before. I think the libertarian fantasy of a free market is as egregious and silly as the communist idea that we're all going to live in a hippie commune outside of San Francisco was in the mid 60s. It is based on a dream and a fantasy-based dream. That's the unfortunate part. And it means that you have to be intentionally blind to the acts of history that have subverted that thought form along the thing. And we'll take more of your calls. There's some other people who have want to chime in on this, especially when it comes to cap and trade and climate change, because there seems to be this big, like you're anti, you know, this, they're calling the president anti-coal. You want to be anti-coal? Move to West Virginia or northeastern Kentucky, okay? And don't be in the coal industry. Don't have a dollar in it. Just try to do anything else and live downstream from coal coke sloth that comes down your rivers and streams. Live downstream with the dead fish and the poison. And then tell me that that's free market. We'll be back.
Holy cow! You just blew my mind!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm tired of being right.
Let's go back to these because we got a bunch of calls about climate change. The president, of course, giving a speech that everybody should read and look at, has some amazing points to it. A lot of it, if you've been keeping up with the issue, you're very much on top of, and it won't surprise any of you, but the surprising part was that he actually said it and went so far as, in no uncertain terms, making it an important issue and saying that he's going to take executive action to deal with a lot of these things because there is no way the Republican Congress in its current form will ever get anything through that isn't a repeal of Obamacare or the limitation on a woman's right to choose. They're not going to do immigration. They're going to stonewall everything. They're going to pretend the IRS scandal is an IRS scandal even when it's not. That's been fun, by the way. I love the right-wingers who've hung their hat on IRS and are now rolling back. How's Benghazi working out as well for you? But let's go to a couple more callers about this. Let's go to Vicky in Chicago. Hi, Vicky.
Oh, my God. I'm so nervous. I'm on the phone with Al Sparks and Jackie.
Don't be nervous.
No, we'll treat you very nice. Go ahead.
I'll try to catch my breath. This whole thing, we switched from talking about global warming to climate change because that's what's happening is climate change. The planet is warming. Mm-hmm. This is indisputable. We can argue about why. There's a lot of different models about what's going to happen as the planet warms. We can't really completely predict it. What we know is that weather patterns are going to change. We don't know exactly how they're going to change, but they're going to change. And we're seeing that now. And to argue about this as an emotional issue or a political issue, I mean, there's a moral aspect to it, but we've got to be rational and scientifically, look at things. And the science on this is pretty solid. The question is, we really don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be warmer. It's going to be hotter. There's going to be more floods. There's going to be stronger storms. But we can't say exactly what, when, where. It's going to change. And we're seeing that.
Right. But I think what we're dealing with is our part in climate change and that we have a responsibility that if we play any part in it and we're endangering ourselves in that playing a part of it, even if it's not because of the heightening of the thing. And by the way, and I believe that's exactly what's happening. You know, the raising of the temperature will eventually affect what vegetation will grow, what animals will survive, and will eventually cascade down to us in that process. But let's say that it's just fluctuating weather and it's just shifting water from an area it was not to a place that it is, which will lead to the drowning of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people over time. That's important in the discussion. And our responsibility, if there are parts that we're not responsible for, here's what we need to do as far as effort. We need to get those people moved out of those areas. If we are responsible, we need to stop what we're doing that causes the damage. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but what we really need to do is stop giving airtime to people who have an idea about something with no facts to back it up.
Yes.
The fact that the planet is warming, it's causing these changes, and the evidence that it's human caused, the warming of the planet is primarily related to carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is because of, you could argue about deforestation, and the other thing is fossil fuel use.
Right.
If we don't change those two factors, it's game over.
Right. Well said. Thanks for the call. We'll be back right after this. John Fugelsang will be joining us. He's actually awake and going to be on the phone with us.
Really?
Perhaps he can answer some of these questions.
How exciting.
Why Jesus hates the trees. Why Reagan wants to cut them down in spirit. We'll be back right after this with more of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks.
Using the whole fist, Doc?
Ooh, river.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Hal Sparks. Joining us on the line right now is the master himself, John Fugelsang. Hi, John.
Good morning, kids. How are you?
Good.
Good morning.
It's good to talk to you. I feel like I haven't spoken to you in forever, you busy man, you.
You haven't. Oh, my God. I'm on the phone with Hal Sparks. I'm so nervous.
You should be. Obviously, huge week, and we thank Steph for going out of town so that it would happen.
Yes.
And I'm sure you've been watching this response from the right.
On which one?
Oh, yeah, exactly. What you mean, the glee about being able to disenfranchise black people now and Hispanics, or the freak out about gay people being able to marry in 12 states?
Exactamundo. We actually had Reverend Dessa Jackson on the other night, the night of the Voting Rights Act gutting. And it's amazing that in 1 week the Supreme Court said if you're gay, you can marry. But if you're gay, black, and poor, you might not be able to vote.
Right. Do you think this will have a backlash in much way the laws that they tried to pass actually caused people to, you know, to double down on wanting to vote, and it actually...
Yeah. If they really thought they could find a way to make poor people, old people, and college students vote less, they've awakened an ID-holding giant. And, you know, it's another sign, as you guys well know, that they're losing. They're terrified.
Right.
Perry is terrified of the great caramel menace taking over his state. And all these guys are going to do is just try to do whatever they can to make more white people and to make less old folks, college kids, and poor people vote. They're desperate, they're losing, and we get to have the front seat at the historical freak show of them completely becoming unhinged for the next 20 years.
Yeah, the response to even the Paula Deen issue this week, you know, I've often said that, you know, you look at how Bill O'Reilly has responded to criticism when people use the N-word, or when they, they don't seem to be allowed to single out a racial group for specific scrutiny and then get away with it. They think that's a violation of their rights as opposed to just social criticism.
Yes.
This is all part of this panic, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you know, but in the case of Paula Deen, we have covered her on Viewpoint this week, and a lot of lefties have been upset thinking that it's a fluff story. I don't think it is. I'm half Southern, and I grew up in a lot of this culture, and there's a lot of folks out there who have no hatred, no malice in their heart. They just can't stop the ignorant crap from flowing from their lips whenever they talk. And, you know, if you look at bigotry being racial hate and racism being things that perpetuate that culture, then it's fair to call her racist. But I think we need, like, a new word for these oblivious racists, these ignoramus racists. I call Paul Ledeen the ignoramus. And I don't think she meant to hurt anyone. I think she's completely clueless as to how hurtful the kind of culture she perpetuates.
Do you think she's unfairly chastised? Do you think she's being unfairly treated?
Yes, I do. I do think she's being unfairly treated, but for a different reason than you think. She's being unfairly treated because she should have been thrown off the air and lost all these advertisers years ago when we found out that she had type 2 diabetes for years, kept it a secret, and was taking money from a diabetes drug manufacturer while still simultaneously selling people battered, dipped, butter-soaked, crispy cream-laden marshmallow and pork-lined lasagna.
Yeah. I totally agree. There are many reasons why her issue was bigger than this. I will say that my problem with what...
But isn't that inherently the problem with our society is we totally overlooked that.
Right.
Yes.
Well, that's
totally
because that's the pleasure and pain cycle. People will, you know, if there's more pleasure out of it, then we'll ignore the pain.
You can poison your fellow Americans with lard and butter and fat, sugar and salt for decades and decades, but say a bad word about them. And then you get in trouble. And that's the thing. Paula Deen doesn't hate one race. She hates the arteries of all races. And come together and agree.
I will say that I agree with you that she's not a hatred-based racist.
Not
I will
a bit.
Think that
not
she is a I will agree, though, that she is a condescending racist who believes in the inherent lesser of the races. And I will attribute that to her seemingly love of African-American people in her employ as if they were pets. There's a way that she handled the Hollis Johnson person in her employ, the man who she said was as black as this board, and Hollis, come out here,
we can't see you
in the dark out there. And the way she
Wasn't
held
that
his
hilarious?
Hand. Yeah.
That's like Rush Limbaugh with his Barack the Dancing Negro chap and then saying, but I employ one of these guys. How can I be racist?
Right, exactly.
That's like Donald Trump perpetuating the birther racist conspiracy while saying, hey, I gave celebrity footage to Arsenio. How can I be a racist? No one's calling them a bigot. I'm calling them ignoracist. They don't realize how they're part of the problem.
Well, I think she views them on the same level that she would view a pet. And I think that's a horrifying, more constant. You can be confronted by your angry racism and have to defend it. In this, it's like when you talk to somebody who calls their pets their children. And having that conversation is really difficult to do because they're not your children. And children do have a higher stake in this world. But the way she was, like, holding this guy's hand and saying, I love him to death. You know, he's just wonderful. There's this kind of almost like you're petting a dog with a limping leg going, I love him so much. He's just wonderful. But if he got a little sick, you wouldn't mind if he was put down. And there's an element of that. There really is an element of that. And it's almost worse than the overt racist who's, the congressional guys we're dealing with right now who are dealing with this from the Paul Weyrich standpoint that just black people and women shouldn't be able to vote.
Of course. Bigots have their hatred out in the open. Institutionalized racists have that, you know, socially acceptable cloaking device. The difference with pets, however, is you can't really dress a pet up to play a happy slave at your merry plantation-themed wedding.
Right. Yeah. And that's the stunning part was that that's where your kind of ignorant racist part comes in, where how she goes, I don't know, you know, they go, how do you know in the deposition, she was saying, how do you know that this isn't, wouldn't you think someone would be offended? And she goes, I don't really know what offends people. Yeah, you do. Now that's.
Well, yeah, she does. And I'm really tired of this whole argument that she's, you know, an older woman and it's from the culture. You know what? She's 68. That means that she was 38 in the 70s. I have it on good authority that Paula Deen has been told that that word's hurtful to black folks.
Right, by her own family members. I guarantee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say it doesn't make her a bigot. You know, I grew up half Southern, half Northern, and I grew up seeing a lot of folks who'd be saying, you know, N-word this, that, all day long, but they had a lot of black friends down up north. I had a lot of folks who would never say the N-word, but they didn't want any of them in their house. So, you know, racism is insidious. It exists in all of us. And, you know, again, it's about a cultural thing rather than the good old-fashioned, comedically rich bigotry.
Yes.
That Rush Limbaugh still perpetuates.
Absolutely.
Thank God.
Well, you know, and I often have to decide whether misogyny is more important than racism to him. You know, I think it fluctuates. He's not quite sure whether he hates a specific gender more than he hates a specific kind of racial group.
Or should we say threatened by?
Yes.
Well, that's where the hatred comes from. It's just
at this point, who even knows what Rush Limbaugh really says? Because he's just a hate monkey who's doing anything he can to keep his dwindling, aging, impacted, colon, right-wing, white male, middle-aged audience listening to him. Rush Limbaugh, you know, is a man who paid a married gay man millions of dollars to sing at his fourth straight wedding, and this week he's freaking out about the evils of gay marriage.
Right.
I have an interesting Rush Limbaugh story, by the way, and this is a great way to get back at somebody if you're mad at them. Somebody once signed me up for the Rush Limbaugh newsletter, and you can't get off of it until you put in your zip code. Well, I don't know what zip code somebody put in for me because they put my email address in. I think it was back when I was at CNN, and then whatever zip code. So he can say he has hundreds of millions of newsletter followers
because
online.
You can't get out.
You can't get out of it.
Wow.
There's no way to get off of it.
The NRA counts their dead members as current members when they brag about their numbers, too. Keep
right.
That in mind.
So, and I'm sure you've been following the Wendy Davis, story as well. And it's amazing. Do you think we're really at a tipping point where Texas becomes purple and that 2014 is actually a surprising, a shock for the right wing?
Well, yeah, it's going to happen. And that's why, you know, look, I don't want to make fun of Rick Perry because it's hacky, it's been done, and I forget the third thing, but you know, it's a clear sign how nervous these guys are that within hours they tried to get this voter ID law back on the books, this completely racist solution to a non-problem. There is no problem with voter fraud in Texas,
right?
And with the abortion bill, it's much the same. I mean, the fact is that, they literally are trying to turn back the clock. And the Texas legislature is cheap on their vote. And I thought, Wendy was terrific. I think that she's a hero to women and men. I think Harry Dean needs to see that's what a real fucking filibuster looks like, and it's good for democracy. And, I hope that we'll be seeing a lot more of her. But, again, this ruling in Texas, they're going to keep on trying to get it passed. And you know what? Let them. They're on the wrong side of history. It's going to hurt them in the long run. These guys don't care about the unborn. They care about shaking down pro-life social conservatives from votes and cash. They don't give a damn about what the Bible says, because I did a whole commentary on Viewpoint on this the other night. Jesus never actually comes out against abortion. And if you read the Bible, God is the leading cause of children being killed and fetuses being killed. Jesus did come out against the death penalty. And the same night that Wendy gave that filibuster, Texas made history by executing their 500th inmate, and it was a woman, a different woman, a woman who didn't make the headlines like Wendy Davis did. And it shows the spiritual hypocrisy of this fake Christian culture of life, where Rick Perry can get up there and say all life is sacred and then sign another death warrant, breaking W's record as the most executioniest governor in American history.
Right.
Little tidbit about Wendy Davis, Huffington Post reporting that she's gotten $240,000 in pledges for her next run for office from members of Move On.
Well, so, yeah, she's going to lose her job because of the gerrymandering anyway. So, you know, a lot of people are already asking for her to come in and
run for governor.
Which would be great to see.
Absolutely. And it looks like if Ann Richards is any example, a tough woman willing to fight and who has, at least got some, a charm offensive that she can actually push forward is got as much of a chance as anybody in the Texas legislature to run for governor. So fingers crossed that actually is how that plays out. John Fugelsang, of course, always great to talk to you. Sorry there was no real news to discuss and round of topics. But we thank Steph for, being out of town, so all this stuff could happen during her break.
I'm sorry I couldn't join you guys in person as well. It was thunderstorms in New York last night, and I went straight from the current studio to the airport and sat on a runway for 2 hours. So I didn't even get into L.A. until 4 a.m.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. So, we're glad you're safe and sound, and travel safely, and that we'll all have the benefit of you being here next week. We wouldn't have been able to have you on camera anyways because they were out for a little while.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, I think
great. Have a great morning. Have a great weekend, guys. And it's a pleasure. And thanks to everybody out there who's fighting a good fight. Let's not let up. And now is the time to get all your friends and all your friends' friends registered to vote now. Don't wait until late 2014.
Yeah, because they're going to put every blockade they can. Better to get it in there presently. Thanks so much, John. Talk to you
soon.
Okay. Bye. Always amazing. We'll be back right after this with the waning moments of our final show together. Hosting the show this week, which has been amazing. And more of your calls, 1-800-STEPH-1-2. I think you should just call in and say how amazing Jackie is. That would be a good job. That would be a good thing to do. We'll be back right after this.
Be like my mom. And
that is great radio.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Quietly, or there will be trouble.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum.
Welcome back. Just the last few minutes of the show, and it's been amazing. I want to thank you, the lovely and talented Jackie Shagner, for being here. By the way, I'm going to be at the Ontario Improv this Sunday. And, of course, I'm going to my band Zero One is playing tonight in Fresno at the Starline.
Road trip. Well,
in Fresno, 833 East Fern Avenue. Just look up Starline in Fresno and you'll find us. We go on tonight as part of this. It's a long story, but
is it Battle of the Bands?
No. It's a there's a horror convention in town or whatever.
Oh,
and,
cool.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff. And they wanted me there to sign.
You're gonna be
stuff,
in full
yeah,
makeup,
I'll be
horror, zombie.
I'll be dressed like Guar. No, we're playing tonight at the Starline and in Fresno. And so if you're in that area, you have friends in that area, send them. And then Sunday night at the Ontario Improv, improvisation.com, I think is their website, and you can find your way to tickets and all that kind of stuff. Or you can just go to my website, and I've got all that stuff there. There, I've done my pitch.
Bookmarked.
And I feel good about that. And next week
I want to do a little Bert and Ernie. Can we do that before we finish
Yes,
up?
That's what I wanted to get to
okay.
real quick. So the cover of the New Yorker has Bert and Ernie looking at the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
where,
they're sort of cuddled up watching TV, and on it is the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and they're hugging.
Well, they're cuddled.
Yes, it's
right?
really adorable.
It's very cute.
Yeah.
So
it's called the cover is actually titled Bert and Ernie's Moment of Joy.
Okay, so the Sesame Street Workshop issued a statement on their Facebook page saying that they are not gay. But it also says that they are best friends. They were created to teach preschoolers that people can be good friends with those who are very different from themselves. And even though they're identified as male characters and possess many human traits and characteristics, as many Muppets do, they are puppets and do not have a sexual orientation.
Right.
But it's very cute. And there's actually been a petition online calling for them to get married. And
right.
it's been an internet sensation for a while. But it's very, very cute.
It's just kind of sweet. In
it is very sweet
it
and
is
very
sweet.
Endearing.
But
yeah.
I get where they're coming from. It's like
before conservatives freak out and want to pull PBS funding because Bert and Ernie are gay and going to get married. And,
they want to pull PBS funding because they keep insisting on Spanish. Why do they keep bringing up Spanish? Let's take a couple of calls as we're getting near the thing. Let's go to Donna in Virginia. Hi, Donna.
Hello.
That's such a high. Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I am calling, first of all, to thank you for getting it. I am a black gay woman who has gone through tremendous ups and downs this week with all that has taken place. and see, the thing is that when I leave the house, no one knows I'm gay, but they do know I'm black,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I was listening to you in the last conversation. And one of the things that I see is taking place is people are decent to each other or more so than they are not.
Mm-hmm.
And they think this decency has eliminated all forms of isms. Well, I was, you know, I let that person go ahead of me, therefore I'm a good person. I'm not a racist, I'm not a sexist, I'm not a homophobe. And they're not clear anymore. Nobody's burning crosses on the front yard, but the attitudes that, as you stated very clearly, and thank you, is that I am a better person than that person. They are not the same as me.
Right. There's this subtle kind of, condescension that goes with it that is more permanent than a confronted form of racism. And I find it almost more worrisome, the soft, cuddly Paula Deen racism over the overt, you know, kind of Klan-esque stuff where we can all kind of see it. It's there. It's present.
You know what you're dealing with.
And it's more consistent, too. It's in the hiring practices of businesses. It's in the voting rights eliminations that are going on in the states. You're absolutely right, Donna. It's But, you know, what the answer is, I can't tell you. I mean, I think it's really just a matter of time that generationally it's going to be a shift.
You know, I am in the baby boomer generation.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in my early 20s, there was writings that when the generation before me passes on, all these isms will disappear. Well, now that I am a senior citizen and listening to the younger people out here, they are saying when all the baby boomers are gone.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if these things will disappear.
Well, you have to understand there are people in this, and I appreciate the call. We're up near the end of the show, so thank you so much for calling in, Donna. We're at a point where there are people on this planet who are at different levels of the evolutionary cycle insofar as women's rights and gay rights and minority rights, and will be. And by the way, there are people within those minorities in other countries where they are the majority who have the same issue with other people or whatever. This is a human arc of of protectionism and stuff that is equated oftentimes with what is familiar. It's childish, and it will take us time to get past it. There is a quickening about it that I find very affirming, and it has a lot to do with media. It has a lot to do with access. It's way harder to convince your children that, you know, of all your racist reasoning for not liking black people if they see them frequently. And that was the issue before, was that when there were no black people on TV, except for the ones we could carefully craft as a character, then, I could convince you that
happens
they were less
Jewish
than
Jewish people too.
Right, exactly.
You don't know a Jew, you think the Jewish people have horns and tails.
Right, and gay people. There was easy thing. They're all pedophiles. All these mythologies are built on the idea that you won't ever run into one that
right.
would contradict that idea. And media actually solves that problem and opens the door for people when they move into neighborhoods and stuff. They've had a precursor. They've had somebody come in and introduce them already, and that's been the media. That's why it's important. That's why the message is important. That's why corporate control over and limited message is a very toxic thing in media. Openness is very important. So thank you guys so much. It's been a great week. Thanks everybody in the chat room for joining us. Thank you,
Jackie
Checker. Thanks Tony, and thanks T-Bone. You guys have been amazing.
So much fun.
Stephanie and the crowd will be back on Monday. We'll see you guys. I'll see you next Wednesday. Have a great weekend. Take care of yourselves and take care of somebody else.
She turned me into a newt.